wizard, Harry. To the Harry Potter Book Club for The Order of the Phoenix with
Michael DeMauro,
Vijaya Shrestha,
and I'm Sarah Tompkins. This week we talk about Chapter 1, Deadly Demented. We also discuss our Book 5 preconceptions, and the contested Quidditch Cup begins.
So we're back for the first Quidditch face-off of season 5, and I think we need to start by thanking all the beautiful people who helped this make this happen, or thanking Megan for being our quiz mistress again. Both at the same time. Thank you, everybody, including Megan, for being the quiz mistress, but also thank you, everyone else, for supporting us on Kickstarter.
Because it was amazing.
Because we wouldn't be here without you.
Yes.
So thank you. And thank you, everyone, in the chat room tonight.
Woo, chat!
I hope you're all doing well.
I'm not. I'm about to have a heart attack.
Yes.
I hope you still love us after whatever transpires here.
So for those of you who are new, which is definitely possible, this is Quidditch. We battle for trivia. There's an award at the end, which is a trophy. And basically every episode we ask two questions and we try to see who can, as fairly as possible, answer trivia and gain points. And I think the way we do it is two people face off and then whoever gets it wrong goes on to the next question, and then two people face off again. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Am I explaining that right?
Yes.
So basically the person who's not in the face off is in the next face off.
Yes.
And Sarah always forgets the half point, no point,
full point
rules. That's a rule that I'm going to argue about half points, full points, and I don't know what I'm talking about. So just don't worry about it.
Yeah. If you get it right, then you have full point. If you get it mostly right in the eyes of our good friend Megan, then you get a half point. She's the only arbiter of points, so no one argue.
Yeah.
And then I guess the last thing I will say is that we are going to go through half of the season with this initial recording, and then we're going to do the final half at GeeklyCon live in front of a studio audience. So that'll be exciting.
Nerve-wracking and horrible, but also awesome because it was super fun. It was super fun last year. I had a great time.
It was super fun because I won and it was a great fun.
I did. Okay, so I didn't even win and I had a great time. That's how fun it was.
It was wonderful.
All right. Let's start this.
Okay, so Vijaya is the returning champion, so she's going to sit out. Can't believe we let this happen, Sarah. But
you know what? Feeling how prepared I am for this, I can totally believe it. Okay. Also, I held on to that trophy for way too long. It's karma.
Joe had a good suggestion in the chat. He said calling a Megan keeper of the questions sounds
good. Ooh, cool. I like that.
Oh, that does.
That is very good.
Thank you, Joe.
I like it.
Keep breath of the questions.
Keep it up.
You're really feminizing this. I love it. The best.
All right.
Okay.
I think you all are, postponing, procrastinating. Let's go.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Can I ask a question first before we begin?
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
What sound will you be making? Vijaya, is that your sound that you're going to make?
No. I don't know.
Just so I can tell, a difference between you, if it's really close.
I ding. I go ding, ding, ding.
Okay, that's right.
I do the sort of foghorn meets moose. I don't know. And it's like that.
Bah.
Oh, isn't the other contentious rule when you can't ring in until the question is complete?
I'm also bad at that. I'm bad at rules.
Well, there's no, I mean, language, right? It's kind of up to our brains to figure out when the question's over.
Mine is going to be neither a ding nor a foghorn. So whatever comes out of my mouth that is not those two will be mine. I don't know what it is yet. I always say it's going to be a woof because that's my brand, but I don't think it's going to be that.
You could just say woof. That could work.
I know. I don't. It's whatever is going to come out of my mouth.
I feel like it happens in the moment, so you just have to go with it. Okay. Are you all ready? First question.
I'm ready.
Yes. I will say one thing quickly is that my... Okay, so this is an unspoken rule about Sarah is that wherever she moves, because she moves all the time, her internet is terrible, and you guys are already sort of breaking up, so I might lose you. Okay, I'm ready.
No!
All right, first question, Sarah and Michael. What sport does Dudley take up?
Ding, ding, ding.
Michael.
Boxing.
Yes, correct.
Sarah! I knew it!
I'm on the board.
Focused. That was an easy one, too.
It was easy, and that I couldn't even... This does not bode well. Oh, Lord.
All right, Sarah.
So now right. I sit out.
Okay. The giant Sarah.
Fuck.
All right, this is a longer one. Keep that in mind. Are you ready?
Yes.
What business opportunity did Mundungus Fletcher sneak off to when he was supposed to be watching Harry? Oh, that was close. I feel like that was Sarah by a hair because she did the foghorn.
God damn it.
he was trying to get stolen cauldrons.
Yes, correct.
If anyone missed it, my buzzer was a blah.
Which was very foghorn-like.
That's true.
It was. Getting close.
I'll try to do a woof.
A woof.
I'll try to do a woof.
Man.
All right, Michael.
I know I'm not supposed to recount the... So we're not even going to be like, goodbye. We're just gonna...
I don't think we did it last season.
Keep plowing on.
Did we? No. What did we do last season?
I think Alan just did it, and then... I mean, we could do a goodbye. I don't remember what we did last season.
Should we pause and listen to one?
No.
I mean, we can just decide.
Okay, we can just decide. I just don't want to make it really hard for Alan.
We can just do, goodbye, see you next week.
Okay. Ooh, that's week one down. See you next time.
Are we going to do this every time? Did we do this last time? One, Dudley Demented. So Harry is back at Privet Drive, back on that same old shit, and he super, super hates it.
Life is really, really unfair.
It's hard. He's been there for 4 weeks already, and that's basically an eternity, especially to a 15. That age, everything is forever. So he's taken to lying in hydrangea bushes, not because they smell delicious and he, like, is super emo, but mostly because it hides him from everybody, and it's prime real estate under the window where he can hear the news as the Dursleys watch it, because apparently the Dursleys are suspicious that any 15-year-old, 14-year-old boy would want to know what's going on in the world. Dudley, they proudly proclaim, doesn't even know who the prime minister is. So that's good.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, they're only like a couple years from being able to vote. They don't need all that information.
They don't need any of it. Anyway, so he's listening to the news because he's trying to hear any super bad information that would indicate that Voldemort is killing people. Because surely if he were to do something very, very horrible as he did in his heyday, that would make the Muggle news. It might not say, like, evil wizard kills group of people, but it certainly would be group of people mysteriously die in mysterious circumstances, blah, blah, blah. So this night, like many others before, there's no news, except there is some great journalism about a budgie who can water ski, guys, which is nice. Cool as heck. A budgie, for those non-British folks out there, is a little parakeet. So imagine that adorableness. You know, he's lying there. Mrs. Fig walks by as he's listening to the news. She seems to be all up in his business lately, just walking around. All of a sudden, he hears this really loud bang, and he's certain it's magic. He stands up, he draws his wand. What he does is hit his head on the window.
Ow.
Which is incredibly painful. Yeah, because as if his scar headaches weren't splitting enough. Vernon comes and, like, basically chokes him, which, again, child services.
Vernon
chokes him with his robot strength. All the neighbors see it and don't report it to child services, which is just a disgrace, to be honest with you. But he can't seem to locate any source of this noise, and maybe he just was overreacting. He doesn't know. The Dursleys are mad that he's been listening to the news again. They're like, this is suspicious. You just took your wand out in front of everyone. That's super inappropriate. We have some decency laws here. Put that wand away. So he decides he's going to go skulking off to, you know, the middle of nowhere. He ends up on the playground, sits on the one swing that Dudley and his companions, who Dudley has told his mother he's going to tea with, which shockingly he is not. He's mostly just beating up kids and smoking and tagging things and vandalizing things. So that's good.
So cool.
He's so fucking cool. And guys, Dudley is also kind of, he like Chris Pratted it and just got like super lean and super buff because he's decided to diet and start exercising, aka boxing. So now he can hit people and he's allowed to hit people because it's his, you know, chosen athletic profession.
But is he hot?
I don't think so. So he didn't pull a full Pratt, so just a partial one.
Damn.
You know, Harry's sitting on the swing, sulking, and he's really upset because he's been getting letters from Harry. He's been getting letters from himself, which is disturbing. No, he's been getting letters from Hermione and Ron, and Sirius, but especially from Hermione and Ron, and they don't have anything important in them. They basically say, we can't say anything because things can get intercepted, and he's really bummed about that, which is understandable, but at the same time, like, get your shit together, Harry. That's what's gonna happen. Sirius is a little bit more understanding. He's like, this must really suck for you. Don't do anything I would do. Don't be rash. Don't be dumb. And he's like, okay, fine. He's been getting the Daily Prophet delivered to him every day, and there's been no headlines. In fact, the people at the Daily Prophet seem to be completely oblivious or willfully ignorant of the fact that Voldemort is back, which is very disturbing to Harry. So he sees Dudley and the gang in the distance, and he really wants to antagonize them because he needs to get his aggression out. He wants to just make their lives hell because they made his life hell, which is understandable, but maybe not the right thing, Harry. Of all you've learned about love and forgiveness and whatever, you decided that you just want to beat people up and threaten them with your wand. That's not super cool. Anyway, all of that to say, they walk, Dudley's friends go their separate ways. They're like, hey, goodbye, Big D, or whatever his name is. And Harry obviously makes fun of him for this nickname. And he and Dudley sort of get a little verbal sparring match and start kind of hating on each other, which is to be expected, but whatever. And then all of a sudden, this extreme chill comes over them, like so cold that nothing good could happen.
Is it a ghost?
No, and it's not even global warming, guys. It's not a ghost or global warming. It is mother flippin' Dementors.
Nuh-uh.
In Wisteria Lane, like all up in there. Yeah, near Magnolia Crescent, near Privet Drive, in Little Whinging.
My favorite line from the movie is, Dementors in Little Whinging? You're welcome.
That's exactly my thoughts and my surprise, even though Harry doesn't say that, I think, directly in the book, but it's true. So he pulls out his wand. He's like, Dudley, cover your mouth, which sounds like which sounds like something you would yell to a friend at, like, a frat party gone horribly wrong. I don't know.
Harry pulls out his wand and he's warns like, cover your his mouth. Cousin. Gross.
And so he's like, Expecto Patronum, but it's super lame and it's just like, blah. It's a little blah of silver, which is very sad. And he tries it again and still nothing. And so this Dementor's getting real close, has real gnarly breath. And so finally Harry just thinks about never ever seeing Hermione and Ron again. And that powers him into giving the full-on stag. So he does Expecto Patronum. That stag comes out. It, like, pushes away the Dementor. And he's like, yo, go this way. So apparently you can direct your guy there, and he has that spear, the guy, essentially, the Dementor that's on top of Dudley. Dudley's, like, in a little ball, which is probably pretty wise. Harry's like, this is so weird. And at that very moment, he sees none other than Mrs. Fig, and so he's like, oh my god, I have my wand out. So he tries to put his wand away really quickly because, you know, Mrs. Fig is there, and he doesn't want to, for all the times he threatens the Dursleys, he doesn't really want to expose the wizarding world, you know, to just any old random old lady on the street.
Or his wand.
He's about to don't expose your wand to any random old lady on the street. That's not going to end well for anyone. So he's about to put it away when Mrs. Fig yells, "Don't put it away, idiot boy," which is one of my favorite things that Harry's ever been called. She goes, "What if there were more of them around? I'm going to kill Mundungus Fletcher." What? And that is how...
What's even happening?
The chapter ends.
Nuh-uh.
Mrs. Fig is some sort of OG wizard lady.
No way.
I don't know. I mean, that's one of my questions.
That's cray.
Yeah, that's cray. So that is our opener. We didn't really have any new things except that we have, like, Dementor's real world little whinging, like, just on top of people in the Muggle world, which seems extreme and bad and not a good sign because that's never happened before or not in the books that we've seen. And I don't remember if it's been mentioned if that happened when Voldemort was at his height in the past, but not great. We met a budgie, the water skis, mm-hmm. which is new. And budgies are parakeets for those, again, who don't know. But we didn't really have a lot of new things. It's pretty much just the same old Privet Drive first chapter that we usually get, except that we got a lot less exposition this time, which was great. We got a tiny bit, you know, Harry's disheveled, the neighbors disapprove, all that stuff. The Dursleys hate him, but not a whole lot of Harry Potter is a wizard boy who lives under a cupboard, or lives, well, he doesn't live in the cupboard anymore, but you know what I mean.
He doesn't live in a pineapple under the sea?
No.
That's
a different magical creature.
Damn.
So the only questions I have were, why does Harry have a death wish right now? Why does he want to just... tickle sleeping dragons all up all over in there? Like, I just want the Dursleys to get mad at me and yell at me. I just want Dudley to be mad, so he wants to punch me because he beat up some young kid, 10-year-old kid who had it coming apparently or whatever. What's going on there, Harry? This is something deep and psychological, which, by the way, he also, I did not mention, has been having terrible nightmares about Cedric dying. What kind of school just lets him go home and doesn't provide him with any sort of counseling service? That's I guess maybe the deeper question, because that's probably where a lot of that frustration and death wish comes from.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole not having answers and not having closure, not having therapy, and, like, all of that wrapped into a good old burrito blanket of teenage angst, just being a teenager. I mean, I was a terrible teenager. I didn't have to go through half of what Harry went through, and I was still like, I'm gonna sleep in a hydrangea bush and listen to the news.
Right. Like, I did that shit, too, but I didn't have to worry about thinking about my classmate dying in front of my eyes and seeing a gross little, I don't even know what you call it, I was like a little slimy death baby being born in front of a tombstone.
Oh, yeah. How do you even, like, I bet you he has, like, nightmares about that. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's, and he does. And actually, Dudley was teasing him about it, in fact, in his chapter.
Oh, yeah, not my mom or whatever.
Because he yells it in his sleep, which is really sad and really terrible. And why has there been no therapy? Because do wizards not believe in post-traumatic stress? That seems,
I mean,
unwise of them.
This is the fourth year Harry has faced something pretty dangerous, life-threatening. And each year they're just like, good job. Here's some house points. That should make up for all the PTSD. All right, here, you get on the train now. Bye.
Baggage for your baggage.
I've never laid in a hydrangea bush or listened to the news.
Michael still thinks that it is 1998.
He was like, excuse me, I was laying in a group of ferns and I was listening to the Pixies because I'm cool.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Michael lays in cacti bushes because he's so hardcore. He's metal as fuck.
I'm no coward.
No, hydrangeas are for cowards.
Yeah, it's crazy that they just, like, I mean, I'm sure they have some kind of, like, magical elixir that they can maybe give him to kind of, like, calm down his PTSD. Like, all those people in St. Mungo's.
I was going to say, we haven't really had a scene where we went to St. Mungo's yet, but at the same time, like, it does exist, and people who have mental, like, serious mental issues are admitted to St. Mungo's.
But those seem like they are, like, out of, like, the range of help. So before you get to that point, clearly there's something that they could have done, and maybe Dumbledore just doesn't think that a growing child, a growing brain like Harry's needs any help. I don't know.
Just drink some fire whiskey and push those feelings down until they're gone.
Put them into a trunk like Moody was in and lock every level.
Just put those in a pensieve and put it away.
Yeah, in a cupboard, just like Dumbly does.
What is it? What is it like? Something, what is the stupid something set forget? What is, do you know the like infomercial thing? Never mind. It'll come to me later. What? I have forgotten.
Set it.
And- it was something, it's like, nope.
Ready, get set, forget?
No, it's something about like, you're like, set, forget, meaning you don't have to worry about it. You can just be like,
set it and forget it.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was a great one.
Anyway, good joke. But my other question is, well, kind of a two-parter. What are Dementors doing in Little Whinging? And what is Mrs. Fig doing with the Dementors?
Look, Dementors are really hardworking creatures, and everyone needs a vacation every now and then, and not everybody wants to go to, like, you know, proper London or Edinburgh. Sometimes people want to see how the rest of the country is living, so they wanted to check out Little Whinging. That's what I think.
Oh, wait, are you saying that they're tourists?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, tourism in Little Whinging is up.
They're trying to experience the local culture.
Yeah, they're literally taking it in. You know, they're just really getting the soul of the place.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. That was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
So that's all we really have. It's a pretty good setup for a book, to be honest. And I think it does a pretty good job setting up Harry's sort of mental place, the sort of the darkness that's going to happen, with not a ton of weird exposition. So I don't know, do you guys have any questions or worries, concerns, thoughts, predictions?
Oh man, that's a lot. Not really. I really want to see what Mrs. Fig is doing there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, me too.
I've already read the whole book, so I don't know.
Stop!
And seen the movie.
By the way, guys, it's just set it and forget it. It was for a rotisserie chicken machine that was very popular. So,
That's nice, guys.
It's not good. I just thought dealing with post-traumatic stress was a lot like making a rotisserie chicken.
I think if you talk to people that have PTSD, they would say that it is exactly like setting a rotisserie chicken thing.
I am sure. Anyway, thanks, guys, for... Aren't you glad we're back again?
Oh,
thank
man.
Thank you. Welcome back.
Man, I'm glad to be back. Really bringing my A game.
Bringing you all the hard-hitting comparisons. Hey guys, I know you all have never read this book before. Am I right?
I've never read a book before.
I read it a few times.
Oh, show off. Okay, fine.
Showboat over here.
Well, you've read a book a couple of times or this book a couple of times?
When I say I read it, I listen to the audiobook.
Oh, are you even a real fan?
No, not really.
So let's talk about what you all thought of, what like conceptions you had about this book before you got into it for the first time.
For the first time?
Yeah. I don't remember going into it the first time, but this time I certainly have preconceptions.
I can't remember if Goblet of Fire or Order of the Phoenix was my first book that I actually went at midnight and got it.
Mine was either this one or the next one.
Mine was Prisoner of Azkaban.
Okay, let's show off. Jeez.
I'm so cool. Now, I feel this book came at a time when I was a moody teenager. And even I thought Harry was a little moody. And that's what I remember. And also, I remember that I have never hated a character more than I hated Dolores Umbridge.
Yeah.
I remember how angry she made me. I've never been so angry at a character in a book.
Sorry, to go back, this was definitely the first book I went to the store for.
Ooh.
At midnight, because Goblet of Fire came out 2000, so my parents would have still had to drive me, but 2003 I was a senior. And I drove myself to the good old Meijer and got mine.
What?
I know.
Is this 2003?
Yeah, this is 2003.
Okay, so this is the first one that I got.
At midnight?
I mean, I didn't get any of them at midnight, you guys.
What?
But the first one that I got right when it came out.
Why are we even doing a podcast with him?
What? I don't even know.
You should just kick me off.
That's whole auditions for a new host. Yeah, I remember just thinking, obviously, it's going to be more serious, more adult, more dark because of the way Goblet of Fire ended. But I was so excited. I just remember being excited and reading it all in like a couple of days.
I read it in one night. I used to do the thing where I'd get it and I would start reading it right at midnight and I wouldn't go to sleep until I finished it.
I'm sure I tried to do that, but I'm sure I couldn't fall asleep.
I had a 1-year-old child.
Oh my god.
So
you're so old.
We were in slightly different places in our lives.
Yep. I don't think I could drive myself yet. Times. No, I could. 2003. Yeah, I could drive in 2003.
Man. So what are our feelings now before we read it? Has anyone started reading it? I hope so, because we've already done the first chapter.
Yes, I have. Harry's still very moody, but I feel like my feelings are going to be that, yes, I'm going to be annoyed at how moody Harry is, but I also feel like I might have, even if not a deeper sympathy, at least a deeper appreciation for how accurate to real life as a teenager that is, one, and two, you know, the idea we had talked about with this chapter that he clearly has post-traumatic stress, and which is very serious, and he has no real way of handling it. So obviously that aggression is going to be doled out and coming out in the wrong ways. And I think that I'm thinking that I can at least be less mad at him than I was when I initially read this book, because I was pretty annoyed with him when I read this book. So I was like, it's not Hermione and Ron's fault. None of it's their fault. I still think I'll be annoyed, but at least I think that I'll have maybe the wherewithal to understand that it's a pretty accurate representation of what that would be like for Harry.
But, I mean, like we talked about it earlier this episode, if they had provided therapy in some ways for Harry to, you know, some kind of outlet, maybe through art, maybe Harry wouldn't explode all over his... Oh, that sounds gross. Maybe Harry wouldn't take it out all over his friends, on his friends. Jesus.
Yeah, I think this might be my least favorite book.
Really?
In the series.
Just because he's so emo?
Like, I know it's a better book than, like, book two, but this, it's just, like, it's just stressful and hard, and everyone's angry all the time, and only bad things happen to Harry, and Dolores Umbridge is so horrifically awful, and it's just, like, bad, 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 bad.
I'm wondering how my current feeling on authorities and people in power is going to influence how I feel in regards to Dolores Umbridge. Maybe not the intellectual level of said authorities, but just that. I wonder if that's going to make it a little bit harder, even more than normal, for me to be... Not tolerant of Dolores Umbridge, because I never was, but to get through the book without, like, throwing it across the room at how angry I get at Dolores Umbridge.
I wonder how many parallels we can draw with Umbridge and the Ministry and our current administration. That would be fun.
That's kind of what I'm feeling.
We should count it.
It's gonna be a hoot.
I will say, I think I agree with you, Michael, that I think that this might, at least going into this right now, this is maybe my second least favorite, just after the second. I still think the second is my least favorite, but I'd be interested to see if this wins for least favorite or if this actually rises in esteem for me, because I feel like book one's going to be hard to top just because it was the first book and it was so magical. Book three is a great book. Book four has always been one of my favorites. I love book six. Book seven is maybe my favorite now. I don't know. So that's going to be tricky. But there's some really cool stuff in book five, I will say.
Yeah.
Going into rereading this, I'm already stressed out about the end part of this book, having to read, like, the battle, the next battle at Hogwarts, at the Ministry. It's already stressing me out a little bit, because that is so stressful. So that's, I think I'm looking least, kind of looking forward to see how, like, I deal with it this time around, because I don't think I've read this book for at least, like, 3 or 4 years. But at the same time, it's also stressing me out.
I think, like, how Sirius is handled, like, throughout the whole book, where he's just, like, he's so miserable for, like, so, like, the whole time. It's like he's still in Azkaban. He's, like, so, so miserable. And then...
he's in a different kind of prison.
And then, you know, no spoilers or anything, but how it ends, I've never been super happy with, which I'm sure we'll talk about at the time, but I don't know. It's just so, like, meh, it happens, it's over.
It's interesting. Again, I feel like I wonder if that's going to be something I also also feel hindsight, and hindsight is an interesting, if I'm going to have some sort of deeper appreciation for how JK did that, because I feel, and I mean, maybe this is me being too generous with that particular death. Again, spoilers. Whatever. But just that sometimes things happen and there's nothing, there's no fanfare, there's nothing dramatic. It just happens and it's horrible and it's like someone's there and then someone's not there. And so there's something poetic about it, and I don't know if that's what she intended, but I can kind of feel like I could appreciate that and the subtlety of that more now than I could then.
It's incredibly bleak.
Yeah, and I love bleakness. I guess that's Sarah Tompkins, attracted to sad things. That's what I'm all about. But like, we also meet Tonks in this book.
Yay, Tonks.
And Tonks is one of my favorite characters like ever in this series, and you know, you find Grimalt Place, which is such a cool concept. You know, there's all these really amazing cool new devices that come up in this book that sometimes I think you forget about in all of the angst and everything. So
you get to be better friends with Luna, so that's good.
Yeah, Luna is more of a thing. Remus has returned and is
around,
maybe a better sort of role model for Harry than other people.
And there are more like interactions between adult relationships in this book than there have been in other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Adults being adults, and adults can be petty too and terrible, just like kids.
That's for sure.
That's what I learned from this book.
And goddamn if I don't love a gothic setting, because the Black household is a gothic setting and it is beautiful. It is so creepy and gross in all the ways that I love.
Sarah, when did you get that teardrop tattoo on your face? I don't know if that's gothic.
That's not gothic, but
that's hard ass.
We're not going to tell. That's from my time inside. So that's a different story.
She killed someone.
Did you go to Sing Sing?
They sent me down to Sing Sing.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. That was best.
Fun.
Anyway, right now it's seeming like I'm a little bit more optimistic about this. Michael's not super optimistic. Bajai is cautiously optimistic.
I'm cautious.
Cautious. Stressed out is more accurate.
Stressed out, but also I want to see if I will still be stressed out.
There you go.
Maybe you won't be.
Maybe.
To be continued.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun. See you next week. Bye.
For joining us for You're a Wizard, Harry. Special thanks to Alan Matthews, our editor, Jesse Carlton, who provided our artwork, and Sean Fagan, who provided our music. Hi friends, want to help us out? Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Or if you want to get in touch, email us at potterpod@geeklyinc.com. Want to talk to us on Twitter? Find us at potterpod. Or find me at Her Lady Tompkins. Michael is Thrifty Nerd, and Vijaya is Ethnic Ninja. Welcome to the Harry Potter Book Club. The Book Club.
The Cub of the Bear Book.
Lord above. Okay.
I do like that, Sarah, whenever she says SeanFagan.com, she goes, .com.
Me?
Real southern accent. And SeanFagan.com.
I do that?
Yeah.
I don't listen to that part. I wait until the very end for that little tiny last morsel that Alan puts on the end. But I guess
I love that Alan does that.
I know. That's again, I swear. Boy.
It's pumpkin pasties.
Oh my god, I have to like, if you haven't heard that yet, it's my favorite.
I've heard it. Alan actually texted me after, or messaged me after he put that in. I was like, wait. He said, wait till the last minute. I was like, is that Michael's voice? And he's like, no, that's Sarah's voice.
I had a pumpkin pasty. It was mwah.
I think it's called pumpkin pasty.
Pasty. I said pasty.
You said pasty.
You said pasty, so which is something you put on your boob.
Alan, just make me say pasty.
He can't. He can't.
Just edit it in.
I want to hear this back, and it'll be like, I had a great pumpkin
Pasty. And it's just like, that's not your voice.
Pasty.
Pasty.
Pasty. Pasty. I had a pumpkin
pasty.
It was mwah.